Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
We have a wonderful guest lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. Danny Bader. He's a motivational speaker, an author, latest book, Back from Heaven's Front Porch. Danny, thank you so much for taking time out and being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Todd. Thanks a lot for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to listening to your story. So let's go right away. Talk about, if you can, think back to like some of your early years growing up and kind of, if you can, what was going on inside you at the time, you know, early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. So I grew up in a, a middle American family. I had six brothers and a sister, and our life was pretty void of any major catastrophe, you know, other than just fighting with your brothers from time to time during a basketball game. But, you know, really enjoyed growing up, and, you know, what was going on inside of me, I always kind of had an interest in, you know, the bigger picture in life. Always felt like I had a pretty strong connection to something larger than us. And, you know, going through grade school and then high school, thought about what I was going to do when I grew up and thought about being a teacher. You know, and of course, back then, you know, my dad would always say to me, oh, teachers don't make any money. And I would say, I don't care. I can have the summertime off. You know, that was kind of my rationale for it. But, you know, that's kind of what was going on. I always had an interest in helping people and you know, and trying to continue to grow and get better and, you know, what's life all about. It's kind of weird, I think, that showed up for me at a young age where everybody else was just, you know, doing what they were doing. I mean, I was still getting into the trouble that you get into a little bit, but always connected kind of that search.
That's cool that you say that. I mean, and you did mention, like, saying early on, like, you got to get a real job or something to make money, but you didn't let that really squash you. What about, I mean, did you talk about that much, though, after you got those kind of responses from, not maybe just at home, but, I mean, did you talk to your peers about, man, I want to help and help people, or did you learn to kind of keep that more quiet?
Yeah, you know, I did talk to them a little bit, but certainly I was so, you know, when you're younger, when I was younger, I was so influenced by, you know, those people that were key in my life, my mom, my dad, my oldest sister. You know, so I went off to college and majored in accounting because, you know, my mom said, well, you know, accounting, you'll get a good job and it's a good overview of business. And, you know, grades came pretty easy to me. I was thankful for that. So I remember it was, you know, I went to a small school. I went to DeSales University there in Allentown, right in Center Valley. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was probably, you know, end of junior year, maybe that first semester of senior year. I remember I was walking across to the library up there in Allentown. It was cold and snowy, and I was carrying all my accounting books. I had a big fat tax book and a big fat auditing book, and I'm walking across, and I had that moment of realization where I'm going, you know, what in the world am I doing? I do not want to go to work every day and deal with this. You know, so I did suppress it. And even after I got out of college, you know, I took some jobs that in my gut, I knew I probably should not take. But on the outside, people were saying, oh, you'll be good at that. You know, that's a great opportunity to make some money and have a nice career and all. And, you know, as is often the case, you know, most of them did not work out because I finally got to the point where I just, you know, I was listening to myself and I was investing some time to know myself, right? One of those principles. And I just thought my life's too short to, do what you don't want to do. No offense to accountants out there, financial people. I love them. I can love what they do. My accountant is a godsend for sure. Just not, you know, not the best fit for me.
Well, it's good you mentioned that and you recognize that. But I mean, and it's so interesting for me in the different stories. In fact, just the other night I had a young lady on and she just kind of knew in her heart, like almost right away, you know what I mean? And those outside influences didn't really derailer. Some others of us, you know, it takes maybe a lot of doing things we're not meant to do till we sort all out. You sorted out walking across the lawn at the library, on the way to the library, huh?
Yeah, well, that was kind of the beginning of it. It certainly wasn't sorted out entirely. You know, but in the book, you know, you took a look at it and you said that, you know, the friend of yours took a look at it. There's a quote in there that I use that says, sometimes you have to get on the wrong road. You have to make wrong turns to get on the right road.
Yeah.
And I think that's true in life. You know, that's what I tell young people. And I say, hey, listen, you know, you're going to make some mistakes. If we can limit them, great. If we can learn from them, even greater. But as you make choices, you know, about your career specifically, just try to make sure you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of roads that would take us from Pennsylvania to Florida. See where I'm going, but at least we're heading south.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where I want to try to get people moving. You know, what do you really like to do? What are your worldly strengths? Those kinds of things. All right, let's try to make jobs that would be close to that. You know, sometimes when a young person, you know, says, oh, I want to do this, and you look and they know and you know that it's radically away from what their true nature is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may just want to have some conversations with them, ask some questions. Now,
yeah.
we can certainly change. But I think that, you know, it's my belief, you know, and people could disagree with me. But, you know, we're kind of wired by the time we get to be 18, 22, and our nature is pretty strong in terms of what are our worldly strengths. So many organizations take young people in and they focus on their weaknesses and try to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I would say, no, you know, find out what they do well and get them to become excellent at it. Marcus Buckingham and the Gallup organization, they do a lot of research around that. And they say, you know, your area of greatest opportunity is in the area of your greatest strength.
Yeah, that's good stuff. But it took you a while to sort that out too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it did.
Before we go too much further, I want to ask you, when you were young like that, if you've inventoried or really can see it, how'd you feel about yourself? I mean, were you always pretty right with yourself, or was there a lot of emptiness in there, or, you know, a lot of different words to describe those things?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I think I grew up, you know, pretty right with myself. You know, a lot of times as a young man, you're growing up and it's not, you know, I'm an emotional guy and I lead with my heart. And, you know, sometimes through those years, you try to suppress that so you can kind of be, you know, a young teenage macho guy or whatever and not share the emotions so much. But, you know, as people that know me, they would just say, you know, you've always kind of led with your heart and you've got a strong emotion and a strong connection and a good soul. So, you know, I struggled with that a little bit, but not too much.
Cool.
You know, I was pretty thankful that I had that going for me.
Yeah. And you said you had both parents and houses. You come up with, and I certainly don't want to focus on that too much, but so because all the guests grew up in a single parent or a no parent home. I mean, you had a lot of nurturing at home and a lot of support there, basically.
Oh, yeah. Mom and dad were there, and thankfully they're still alive. Dad's 83, yeah, cool. and he's doing good. Mom's 75. So, yeah, we had a real kind of stable household.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, I guess people that didn't, I mean, guys like me and you that have had that, sometimes we can, like, not lose sight of how, you know, valuable and how graced we were with that kind of thing. So, you know, when you listen to people that didn't have that. What about, before I go and let you go any further, what about early on? So you didn't really have like a dream, like you didn't know when you were four you wanted to write, or what kind of other extracurriculars? Were you a gifted artist? Are you still, did you have, what kind of hobbies, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, I play, you know, I like to play sports.
Mm-hmm.
That was big in our household. So I played basketball through high school, and then I played 2 years, you know, in college, Division III. I like to do that, like keep myself in shape. You know, always like to read, you know, so I was always kind of reading books, certainly more towards the end of high school and then through college, and got attracted, you know, to a lot of the personal growth, development, psychology. I'm really fascinated with how our brain works and how we develop our beliefs, you know, and then how we change those beliefs if they're not serving us well.
Yeah.
So was always kind of interested in that, you know? Yeah.
All right. Well, that's interesting to know. And I like to ask kind of those same kind of questions early in the program, just to get a feel for you. Cause you sound like, just, you know, from listening to you for a couple minutes, you sound like an easygoing kind of guy, you know, kind of cheerful spirit. So that's good. How were you with, how were your social skills? You know, were you pretty comfortable in a crowd? How were you with the girls? Like that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty comfortable.
Okay.
You know, in the crowd. You know, early on, you know, I didn't, you know, and certainly some of my buddies were a bit more interested in the girls than I was. But, yeah, it was fine. It always kind of worked its way out.
Yeah, and I asked that, too, because I believe for me, I wasn't, I have real good social skills. I thought I did, but a lot of that has to do, I think, now that I've checked into this, like my own self-worth and self-esteem, you know, and my fears and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't have much courage, you know, I'm a kind of an emotional coward, all that kind of stuff. You know, so those were all things I had to work through. And I like to ask the guests those same kind of things. So,
you work through some self-confidence stuff. You know, I came from a big family, and, you know, my dad preached for us to really be humble. So sometimes that humility can kind of suppress, you know, not so much an ego, but a confidence in yourself. You know, so you kind of balance that fact that, you know, a lot of times I would confuse self-confidence for ego.
Yeah.
You know, and arrogance, you know, as a young person. But, you know, it's okay to be good at something and, you know, to be that with humility.
And it's okay, I believe, to believe in yourself, you know, and believe in what you're doing.
Sure is.
I think that's key. So, okay, in college, you were walking across that library lawn, and you kind of knew you didn't want to be tugging around these books the rest of your life. You probably continued to tug them for a while. I mean, what happened next? What did you do? You didn't change your major in college? You graduated with an accounting degree, or you lose it? What happened?
No, I didn't change. Graduated with an accounting degree, and then when I got out of school, I took a sales job selling medical equipment, and in 1985, it was a great job. You know, I was making more money than any of my friends that had graduated from college, and I had a company car, you know, so my mom's like, oh my gosh, you got a car. Now here I was, 22 years of age, right, just out of college, 21 when I graduated, and my company car was a white Ford station wagon. So imagine, yes, recent college graduate trying to work on his dating skills, driving a white Ford station wagon.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. How was that for your self-esteem then, too, you know?
Oh, man, we had a lot of fun with it, that's for sure. But I stayed in that job for about a year and left because it just wasn't, you know, wasn't a good fit. Again, I didn't invest in knowing myself. People said, well, listen, this is a good industry. It's a good job. You can make some money. You present yourself well. You'll be a good salesperson. And two things that I found out is a lot of times when you're in sales, you're by yourself, which I don't like. I get my energy from being with people. Now I create time in my life to be still. That's really important. But still, my energy comes from being with people. So now in my role now as a, you know, a speaker and delivering seminars and doing coachings and all, you know, that's a good sweet spot for me. The other thing in the sales job is there's a lot of rejection in sales. I hate rejection. You know, I like warm, fuzzy, kumbaya, everybody get along. So I've learned now to kind of deal with the rejection because, as you talked about, I just kind of shifted my internal belief. And, you know, I was doing some work with a guy, and he said, well, how about if somebody doesn't reject you, they just simply answer your question? And I said, I think I could make that work for myself.
Absolutely.
So internally, they're just saying no to whatever proposition I have. I could choose to make it about me, or I could just say, you know, they just said no. So where do I go from here?
Yeah. Those are all things, again, I'm guessing moving forward, what you're going to be talking about is things that you've sorted out along the way. You know, we don't know that, and I guess until we do, you know what I mean, until we look. Right. You know, all those things.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, Todd, as you know. And then we're never done. We're never done. I just turned 49 last week, and, you know, you're never done. You're always trying to get better. Think about what my vision for next year is going to be and how do I have to grow as a person to make that vision become a reality.
Yeah. You know, it's wild too that like someone says it's a good job, you'll make lots of money, you know, and you'll be good at it. And those things are true. But it still isn't maybe what inside of you're meant to do, you know, the true happiness part, you know what I mean? So nobody lied to you, you know what I mean? It just.
They all came from a good place and you know, they love me and they want me to do well, but you know, sometimes they don't have the insight that we have into ourselves, you know?
Yeah. So what happened next after that? I mean, what triggered another move or a shift in you or whatever?
Yeah. So then I was about 23, I guess. So then I set off to find myself. You know how many young people go to find themselves? and I did that primarily in two places, Avalon, New Jersey, and Aspen, Colorado. I bounced back and forth for about 3 years between those two places. And my mom was funny, you know, as funny as she would call, and she'd say, well, Daniel, did you find yourself yet? And I would always say, no, Mom, but this is a good place to look, trust me.
Sounds about like typical mom stuff there, right?
Oh, sure. She loves our kids and wants to do well. And you know, for us, we're out there trying to find ourselves, and to them, you're being a ski bum, you know, even though you're working three jobs, 60 hours a week to pay the rent out in those places. You know, so but that was, you know, part of my learning there was you don't want to set out to find yourself, you know, and that's what I did. And then, you know, when I had my accident, and we'll probably get to that, that's what shifted for me when I said, you know what, it's all about creating yourself. There was a great George Bernard Shaw quote that I reference a whole lot. Life is not about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself. And once I kind of started to shift myself into that world of possibilities and creation, and it took, you know, it took some time. You know, then I thought, wow, now this is pretty cool. I'm much more proactive than waiting for the world to give me a gift or the job or a relationship or whatever you want.
Yeah. But again, the goal there, when you're in it, is you don't know that until... You know, you didn't know that when you were in Aspen, Colorado, that you can't find yourself. You have to create yourself. I mean, that is a learned thing. You know, even at, like you mentioned, accidents or something, typically will trigger us to go a different direction and look somewhere else, you know?
Sure. And if I'd have known, that's a great point, Scott. In Aspen, Colorado, I had some friends out there. I worked for this woman. She had a restaurant, and her husband was a pretty successful real estate guy there. And he said to me one time, he said, you know, what do you want to do here in the future? You want to keep tending bar? And see, I had no idea of creating. I had no vision. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to go back to the beach for the summer in New Jersey. And he was offering me a position with his real estate firm. And he said, why don't you just keep tending bar and get your real estate license and you come to work for us. And here after that, the retail market, the real estate market in Aspen skyrocketed. The average real estate transaction was $1 million. And I look at myself and say, well, I probably would have liked real estate because you're meeting a lot of people. You're taking them into the vision. You know, and I probably would have been, I know a couple guys that went into it that had a heck of a good time out there and made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, no regrets, right? As you said, it's just a learning. But that's a real example back there when I was like, wow, I didn't have a vision. I didn't have, you know, that sense of creating what you want. Otherwise, I would have perceived that opportunity a whole lot differently.
Yeah, well, and then things would be different today. I guess you're right where you're supposed to be anyway. You know what I mean? But that's the thing, paying attention, just even paying attention to that, you know, or asking better questions, you know, of myself and others, you know, that's all learned stuff for me. So,
yeah. Yes, indeed.
So you didn't really have, you're still kind of bouncing around then. You're not, is your heart tugging on you? I mean, can you tell me that looking back? I mean, is there something going on inside of you that you're like, something is saying, Danny, you know, there's something going on here. You're built for something more than this or.
Oh yeah. There definitely was a restlessness in me. And then, you know, the older I got into 28 and 30 and, you know, a lot of my friends were getting married and, you know, having kids and getting established in their careers. You know, they'd been working in a career for 8 years now, or 9 years. So I was somewhat behind them. So my self-esteem started to get beat up.
Yeah.
I mean, I tended to bar up until I was 40 years old. Not as a primary job, but as a secondary job. Even when I was working, when I started to move into a corporate job, I still tended to bar one or two nights a week because I had to make more money because I was kind of behind in the earning category.
Yeah.
You know, so here you are, you're married, you got two kids, and you're still tending to bar. You know, and that kind of beat up on me. I'm like, oh, man, this is not where I wanted to be.
So before I ask this, I want to ask you said you've been married now and had two kids. I mean, how did that all come about, you know, briefly? I mean.
Yeah, well, I dated my wife now. We dated on and off, I guess, about 4, 5 or 6 years. You know, we were kind of friends first and then kind of seemed like we'd keep getting back together. And, you know, we got married after I had that accident in 1992. So the accident kind of, you know, slowed me down and I think really put a little pressure on me to start creating some things. You know, I learned a lot about myself because that took me to some deep places and dark places. You know, so my wife and I then got married after that and had, you know, two kids, and we have three now, 18, 16, and 12, two boys and a girl. So, that certainly worked out well.
All right, so now you're married. You're working. What are you doing at this point with the two kids?
I was working, I worked for a number of years running a restaurant, you know, a large sports bar. Mm-hmm. And then that's not real good for family because you're working nights and weekends.
Yeah.
So I was a general manager. So then I went to work at a credit card company down in Wilmington, Delaware, a large bank. You know, it was a huge corporate bank, international, billions and billions of dollars, primarily focused on credit cards. So that was good. That was where I got into the corporate world, and I started to learn, and, you know, I learned more about computers and technology, because that was back in the, still in the 90s. And, you know, I picked up a lot of professional skills that I didn't have, because I never really worked in that corporate world. But the majority of the time I was in there, this is where I started to figure out, okay, you got to create something for yourself. You know, I didn't necessarily like it. I liked the people there. I liked the experience, but I still knew that I wasn't a corporate guy.
Yeah.
But I was just in there so that I was paying my dues, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is something I never did. As soon as things would get tough, I would just bail out.
Yeah.
But because I had a kid now, because I was starting to get a vision of what I wanted to do, you know, as I grew up, as you said, I wanted to be a speaker and executive coach, you know, lead seminars, personal development, learning and development, organizational development, leadership development. You know, once you had that vision, it made it easier for me to tolerate, you know, the environment that you knew wasn't a good fit, because you had your vision. Your vision gets you through stuff, you know, if you have a good vision.
That's interesting you say that, because I've had times in my life, and I'm guessing other people have too, where we know, or I knew, like intuitively, that this is temporary, you know.
Right.
And you're kind of saying, now that can not also be kind of in a not so healthy way, like in a relationship or something like that. But, you know, I mean, you know, we knew that, but you said it there, then you knew at that point inside, whatever it was changing or shifting in you, that it was, I don't know if tolerable is the word, but more tolerable because you had a vision at that point already, some sort of vision.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
cool. I was starting to listen to people around me. You know, I can recall one conversation, I was getting ready to quit. I said, you know, I can't take this anymore. You don't understand. My boss is a knucklehead. And, you know, all these excuses. And my sister and brother, they looked at me and they're like, Danny, you know what? You can't quit. You can't quit. You've been leaving too long. You got to hang in here. You got to make this work. You're moving closer towards what you want. You know, they really just looked at me and said, you cannot quit. And for my older brother and my older sister, I just kind of obeyed that, you know?
Yeah.
But they were just doing it from a place of love. And I'm so glad they did, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's cool too. I don't know if you knew it at the time, but you see that today. That's cool to be able to, you know, to really honor that stuff and value it. So what I'm guessing now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing the real catalyst that shifted your whole change or the thing is the accident, correct? I mean, is that what it all came to?
Yeah, it certainly was a big event in my life. You know, July 28th, we had that accident and it left a friend of mine dead and I died. You know, briefly, probably 4 to 6 minutes in our worldly time. But where I went was, you know, there was no time there. It was just adjoining with that, what I call God, peaceful, dark, floating, loving place, communicating with this God. And it's interesting as I communicated, and I didn't see light or tunnel, but, you know, I knew I was crossing over. And when I expressed to this God, you know, what about my mom and what about Lisa, who's my wife now, but was my girlfriend then, it was as soon as I expressed that, I was right back in my body. And I read many accounts afterwards where people said they came back when they expressed concern for somebody else or love for somebody else. So yeah, that was a pretty, you know, the accident itself was pretty traumatic. And then, you know, the time after, the months and the years after were pretty tough. I was just trying to sort everything out. I had a lot of survivor's guilt and, you know, I was doing the things that we do. You know, you run away, you drink too much for all the wrong reasons. Nobody knows you. And they don't understand. Life's not fair. All that victim stuff I was in.
So you experienced most of that stuff. It wasn't all just peachy happiness at that point. You had all. You had to work.
No, man. Yeah, it was pretty dark. I went through quite a few psychiatrists there for a little while. Trying to find one that worked.
All right. Well, I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but I think it's important to let people know that, you know, we don't have to do this all perfectly. And, you know, a lot of us like to start at the finish line. So there's you know.
No, it was a dark time. And, you know, it was a time where, I had serious, thoughts about taking my own life because I was just hurting so much. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And guilt. There's guilt in there.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Guilt.
Sure.
Shame,
you know,
fear,
my friend was dead. Yep.
Yeah.
It was my fault. I should have done something different. I should have seen the wires. I should have stopped. You know, it should have been me instead of him because he was married with kids, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that you go through. So, yeah, no, it's we all, and that's, you know, hopefully if anybody's listening out there that has been there, they know what we're talking about.
Sure.
If anybody is there now in kind of a dark, deep place, you know, I would just say really try to get an image in your mind of what better is going to be like. And don't go to one extreme to the other. Just start to think about, you know, a month from now, what's it going to be like if I'm feeling better? And then slow down and really think about who's out there that can help you. And it's okay. You know, we get broken. Our minds get broken. Our emotions get broken. And they can take us to some dark places. It's okay. You know, we all get there. You know, I say rock bottom's an okay place to be. It's not an okay place to stay.
Yeah, it's a great place to start.
There, yeah, just know that there's a path back.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of people that can love and support you back there. You know, if you have a relationship to God, tap into that. And if you don't, maybe consider it.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm not talking religion. I'm just talking about, you know, sitting still with yourself and asking something bigger for some help. Yeah. And you might be surprised at what shows up.
Well, what did you do then? I mean, did you surround yourself with people as you worked through that? And did you seek out, like, you know, counsel? I mean, you mentioned therapy and that kind of thing, but I'm talking about, how did you work through some of those things? Can you describe, you know, actual, like, tools or whatever, how you worked yourself or participated in getting out of that stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question. What I did, and I remember I was down in North Carolina and I was in a pretty bad state, and I called my mom. And she said, "When are you coming home? We can't wait to see you." And I wasn't quite sure I'd ever come home, you know, because I was in such a bad place. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, when she said that, that was what flipped the switch for me. Hmm. You know, and I broke down and I cried and I thought, man, I got to get better. I am going to get better. It was the first time in several months I had entertained it. That's why vision, you know, if anybody reads my book, there's a lot in there around vision. Mm-hmm. The principles are called jackrabbit, because the jackrabbit has really good vision. Its eyes are high up on its head and it's pretty far back. So it essentially can see 360, it can see its whole environment. And for me, that was a good metaphor. Like, I really got to start to be aware of what's going on in my life, in my relationships, my career, my spirituality, my family. So what happened for me was I started to imagine what it would be like if I got better. And filling in the blanks there was this. I went to Westchester University. I just enrolled in two classes in the graduate degree. I went back to work with my buddy, the roofer. There are two brothers, one passed. I went back to work with him. You know, so for me, the vision was, and then the action, so getting you back in the game.
Yeah.
Getting you back in the game. That was, you know, wasn't perfect, and I started to let my friends in. I let my family back in a little bit, you know, kind of shared some stuff with them. Not everything, because it's so hard to talk about.
Yeah.
But the main thing that shifted was that internally, I made the decision and the commitment to get better. I had no idea how long it was going to take, how it was going to happen, but that's the key, I think, for a lot of people. Make that internal shift, you know, and start to get a vision, start to fill it in, you know, fill in the blanks.
When you're talking about that, I find it so cool and interesting that you actually described it as that moment when your mother said, "When are you coming home?" I mean, you almost can pinpoint that exactly when whatever it was triggered you to look in a different place or get it. Or entertain a different idea or something at that point.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely right.
And that's why I ask about the catalyst. All the guests, it seems, everybody, change comes only something somehow we have to get in our minds that something needs change, however that gets in there. So, and
that's it.
The tragic part for a lot of us is that it's something typically the event is. From the outside, it looks very bad or tragic or hard. You know what I mean? But I've also talked to people that just got a look from their nephew one time at a Christmas party, and it triggered them to do something, to change. Mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't have to be like a car accident or something. But again, the universe had you just ready exactly at that moment to hear it that way. I don't know how else can you describe it any other way.
Yeah, no. And my mom, you know, when I chatted with her over the years, she says, "I said that? I don't even remember saying it." You know, which is a lot of times, you know, that's kind of how it works with people. They just say, "I don't even remember saying that." But
yeah,
and maybe, yeah, that was it. That was the moment. As you said, a lot of times people can say, "Here's this one thing turned me around."
Cool.
You know,
that's cool.
Yeah.
So then you came back and you faced some of your fears and some of your guilt. You said you went back to work with that other brother, you know, to face that stuff. Yeah, where'd the courage come from? You just were driven at that point. Did you write it down? Did you write it down and say, "I'm gonna change.
No, I did. You know, I didn't back then. Since then, I start to write my vision, and you know, I have mine for 2012 around my health and my job and career and my kids and my relationships and all that. But I didn't write it down back then. You know, going back to work, I think, you know, of course, there were some people, my mom and some other people going, oh, no, you can't go back. You can't go back. Sure. The guy I used to work for, he's just wonderful. I'd still stay in touch with him. He never blamed me or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever blamed. I blamed myself, you know. My buddy's wife, you know, who died. I saw them a couple of months ago. Great. Three kids. They're all wonderful young people. And they never blamed me. It was all myself, you know. So when I wanted to go back to work with him, he said, I don't know if that's a good idea. And we talked about it a little bit. And I said, well, it's not forever. But, you know, you think he had a nice business. And you know, it was me, him, and his brother working. And we were doing pretty good. And, you know, next thing you know, his brother's passed. And I was out of work for, gosh, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And yeah. My feet were all messed up and, you know, workers' comp and all that crazy stuff. Yeah, it was just a vision of starting to get better, and then the key is to take that action.
Yeah, the action.
You know, the action. People think they have to figure out the path.
Yeah.
And I'll offer to them that what I've found is I said the action is the path.
Yeah.
You just start to take a couple of actions, and you keep doing that, and you keep doing that, and you'll look back, and you'll say, "Wow, look at where I've come from where I was."
that's cool. You know, and if you wanted to have been, it's a lot of times I know for myself, I've carried around guilt and shame and those things for decades. And when I finally face up to it through certain principles, I found out, like you were mentioning, that it was never even really the truth.
Yeah,
you know, I make a choice to destroy my life, and it based on a false, it wasn't even reality, you know, and that's a drag, you know. So it's cool that now you're there and you're seeing that wasn't the truth, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then at that point, did you get a real hunger to start at reading some more, maybe motivational things or seeking out? How did this all come about, like to where you are today, you know, prior to the book, let's say?
Yeah, I did. I started to read, you know, a lot of books back there. I actually read one back in college. I remember it was by Dr. Wayne Dyer, who's certainly a well-known author now. So yeah, I started to read more of those, you know, kind of inspirational self-help books. You know, some were very worldly in their motivation. You know, as I look back on some of them now, I don't really connect with them, you know, but in the moment, it you know, kind of got me where I needed to be. And, you know, certainly read a whole lot of, you know, spiritual books too. My spirituality is really important to me. So it was, you know, it was important to kind of get back in the game from that perspective.
Yeah. Now you mentioned the vision. You talk about a lot of my guests, and I have them around my home. Kelly and I have a vision board. We believe in those things. In fact, the Jackrabbit principles are on there. After Kelly read the book, we added that to the vision board.
Awesome, man. I love that.
Oh, yeah. But you're saying the visions, and just from a lot of the reading I do and the coach and I allow myself to get, you know, we actually believe in seeing it to get that imprinted on there. You know, there's some accountability there as well. Did you start using any of that stuff or?
Yeah, I first started to get into those. I'd seen them before and I'd done a couple. Mm-hmm. But I do some vision boards. Actually, I'm in my office right now. And if you look in my inbox, you know, where I throw all my papers and stuff until I process them, you know, at the bottom of the inbox is a little vision. You know, it's just 8.5 by 11 and it's got a lot of pictures cut out.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this in January 2007. And it's just one of my favorite ones. There's a logo of the jackrabbit there. And this is way before the book came out. You know, there's a picture of a speaker talking to a couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in 2007, I wasn't talking to a couple hundred people, you know, and now I am.
Yeah.
And there's one that says positive home. You know, so with three kids, I think we have three well-adjusted, you know, positive young people. That because it's here, you know, my wife and I are committed to raising them in that manner. So you know, I think you and I both know that the unconscious mind. You know, the subconscious mind is really, really powerful. And if we can start to program that with enough of what we want, you know, there's a likelihood that we'll start to take action because our mind likes completion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what our mind imagines, it really wants to create. That's why before people, I've said to people, and they go, is that really working? I'll say, well, have you ever imagined a party that you're going to go to or a vacation that you're going to take? And they go, yeah. And I said, what happens? They go, oh my gosh, my whole mood changes. I get excited and everything else. And I'll say, yeah, you probably take all the actions you need to take to get ready for that party. Or, and it's fun because you're holding on to that vision. You know, it's the same way for our lives, just to create that vision for our life. You know, Steve Jobs in business, he was great at it at Apple, you know.
Yeah.
He was your master visionary. Mm-hmm. You know, when he said to his team, I remember in Newsweek or Time, he said something like this, I'll paraphrase. But he said to his team when Apple was kind of down in the dumps, he said, all we need to do is create something smaller than a deck of cards that holds 10,000 songs. And, you know, the iPod is what came out of that vision.
Yeah.
And so people go, I don't know how to get it. He said, don't worry about how to get there. Let's just get clear on the vision. Let's just get clear on where we're getting, you know, what we're going to produce. We'll figure out the how.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same way in life. If you sit there and you try to figure it all out, you go crazy. You know, just get clear on the vision and start moving towards it. And there's going to be the unexpected challenges and turns and everything else.
But, one step at a time, right? One step at a time. That's what we do. Yeah.
Well, here's the power, too, I'll tell somebody. You know, a friend of ours, our daughter does gymnastics, and she's got a little friend that does them with her. And I was talking one time to this girl's mom, and she came into the gym, you know, we're picking up the kids. And she was just like, you know, wringing her hands and shaking them out. I said, what's the matter? And she said, my arms are so sore. And I said, well, were you doing yard work? Or I forget what I said. And she said, no, I had a dream last night that I was hanging from a rope. So think about that.
Yeah.
A dream that you're hanging from a rope and your arms are sore. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the power. That's the reality of that unconscious mind.
Yeah.
You know? Good stuff, man. A lot of people dismiss it as, you know, self-help, California, you know, all that kind of stuff.
we just hope they try something as an experiment, and then they can decide for themselves, right? It's not, you know, take it or leave it. As you kept moving forward in this, and I guess your heart's kind of lighting up a little bit inside. I mean, you're seeing that this stuff is working, but you made a commitment. Mm-hmm. Somehow you made a commitment. You said you didn't write it down at the moment, when, you know, especially mm-hmm. when you went back to work there, but you made a commitment to get better. And that's a pretty mm-hmm. broad statement. So how did you move forward? And when you left that job, because I want to talk about the book and everything as well and how it all came about. So what happened next, and what kind of actions did you take to get to the next?
Well, the main thing is that, as I started to get better and I created the vision, I said, you know what, I want to work in education, personal development, growth with people. And I had two choices, you know. I had no experience in that at all, no professional experience, right? But I'd certainly read enough books and kind of worked with people. So I thought to myself, you know what, if I go into corporate America and I try to get into their learning and development, you know, that will be good. So what happened is, you know, I sought some support. My sister-in-law knew somebody who was pretty high up at this company. And she said to me, yeah, you can come in, but you can't start there. You got to start, you know, in the call centers, working Sunday through Thursday, and managing and all that kind of stuff. So I did, and I stayed with that for about 4 or 5 years. And then that's when I started to meet some people in the learning and development department there, and started to do a couple seminars. And I was only doing them part-time. I would still have my regular job. And they'd say, all right, come up and do one a month or whatever. And then I moved over there full-time.
Okay.
And then that's where that's when I knew I was in my sweet spot. When you could really spend some time helping people reflect on how they could get better as a leader with their communication skills, understanding themselves, maybe through a Myers-Briggs or a DISC analysis, something like that. You know, then I was kind of in my sweet spot. And I did that up until about 9 years ago. Yeah. And then left the company and worked with a couple of consulting firms now. And, you know, I'm still full-time employed by them. And I'm just, you know, developing the Jackrabbit brand and working on the book and getting some ideas for book number two.
It's cool, though, that you know, by that point you were showing up, you know, because you didn't know you were going to, you know, exactly where your sweet spot, where you were going to realize it exactly. But right, you were showing up. Right. You said 4 or 5 years, you were showing up. You know, you didn't quit, and, you know, and you were present. And I'm sure, well, I'm guessing this whole time you're still participating in your own spiritual development, and you're seeking out these new, you know, ideas and getting new visions. So you were pretty on fire at that point.
Yeah, I was, you know, feeling pretty good. I still have some things that you know, that I did that I probably wished I hadn't done. You know, we all still make some mistakes and you're still learning. But I definitely was on, you know, I was definitely headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's funny, the people that know you, they just look and they go, man, I'm so happy that you've found what you wanted to do. And then I would always challenge them and say, you created what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
It took me a little while. Most of those people were really near and dear to me. And I would say to them, hey, listen, I love you because you helped me here. You stuck with me, you encouraged me, you supported me. So it was, it's good stuff that way.
Did you seek out any mentors? Sometimes someone has like one or two, or sometimes there's a whole bunch, or angels or whatever you want to call them along the way.
Yeah. You know, I did have some people that I kind of stayed connected with. Most specifically a buddy of mine, and he's since passed away. His name was Bruce, and he was, I guess Bruce was about 10 years older than me, and he had been in the corporate game, you know, as a learning and development vice president and all, and then he went out and started to work in the consulting world. And, you know, Bruce was definitely a mentor of mine. I think about him often. He passed a few years ago, you know, too young. He was just in his early 60s.
Yeah.
But, he was cool. I actually still saved his last email that I got from him, you know, before he passed. And, you know, I see that often. Just kind of put it in my calendar and shows up every couple of weeks. And it just, you know, reminds me of him. He was a great guy.
Yeah. Well, and that's cool to know. And I like to ask that question. I reflect on my own life while I'm listening to my guests, you know, just, you know, sometimes if, you know, you see somebody and you might not even know them real good, but you just feel them and you kind of want whatever they have or it interests you, you know, and you get drawn to somebody. If I can let them help me or ask or go and talk to them and ask them some questions, you know, my whole life changes. Really, literally.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I was actually just having that conversation with my nephew on Thanksgiving. He just graduated from college and, you know, I've got a couple of friends that I hold in high value. They're successful business people. They're good dads and husbands. You know, I said to my nephew, I said, you know, do you ever think about getting a mentor? He's like, I haven't really thought about it. And I said, well, why don't you give that a little thought there? And then, you know, I got a couple of guys, and he knows me, you know, from growing up.
Yeah.
I said, it's just different. You know, it's not, you know, you're going to go to your mom and dad. You're going to come to Uncle D and ask him stuff. But, you know, it's different. It's a different relationship when you have that mentor.
Yeah. Well, it's a power of example. You know what I mean? Like, they can just show me. They don't have to tell me. Then my defiance doesn't kick in. You know, if I just watch and there's something that, it looks good to me, you know, that just helps me, you know, but again, it's making a decision on where I'm going to be present, you know, where I'm going to show up, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I got to hang out with those people. That's for me anyway, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So those people helped along the way. You see that today and you probably saw it then. And now you kind of said you're in your sweet spot. They're still in the corporate world, you know, but being able to like self-development and help other leaders. How did the idea of the book come about, or did you skip over that part? Did you have a dream? Did that idea come to you sooner than this, or how did this all happen?
Well, no, that had been around for a long time. I'd kind of fooled around with it after the accident. Okay. And actually started it in so many different ways, but I never focused on it. It would just be every now and again show up and I'd say, I'm going to write a book. And I didn't really do it with any discipline. That didn't happen probably until about the past 2.5-3 years, I guess. Probably about the past 3 years, because we were finished last January. It was kind of tightened up, and then it went to press in August.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, you know, two reasons. I you know, I felt like God was telling me I really needed to write this story. Mm-hmm. And not I thought he was. You know, I just felt the pressure and the love saying, okay, finish it. And then just from the worldly perspective, you know, I've been talking about it for a long time. Some of my friends are like, you know, you better shut up, stop talking about it, get this thing done. And I'm like, you know what, you're right.
That's good. Yeah.
And, you know, I broke through a lot of the fears. You know, the whole, you can't write a book. What if people don't want to read it? What if it's stupid? You won't find a publisher. You know, I broke through all that stuff and just got into it and trusted.
By that point, I guess you believed in yourself enough and you believed in God and your purpose enough that it's easier to work through the fears, I guess, when you really believe it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
sure
that's
is.
Why when I ask you about the mentors and surrounding ourselves with other people, like-minded or positive people, because I find for me, you know, if I accidentally tell the truth and slip out something that I want to do, they kind of keep reminding me, hey, where are you with that? You said it too. Your friend said, right. Hey, you better write the book or shut up.
That's the truth. That is the truth.
But that's cool, you know, like then it's always that nudging going on there, pushing us, you know, to be better versions of ourselves, kind of, you know?
Yeah. Holding up accountable, cool. You know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, when I first hear the word accountable, I'm thinking, I don't like that. I don't like responsibility or discipline or accountability, you know?
Yeah, a lot of us don't.
I resist that stuff, you know, and I do much less today than I used to, but I still find myself, you know, resisting some of that. Yeah. So, I mean, but when you said you really made a disciplined effort to put the book together because you knew it was time, did you have like notes written or journals from before? I'm interested in that. You know, a lot of authors say they had things written down all over the place for years and they kind of put it all together. Does that work that way for you?
Yeah, no, you know, the way it worked for me really is I just kind of jumped in and started writing. And my learning from that is when book number two comes, I'll do more of what you just talked about now.
Yeah.
I'll make sure that I have some outlines and structure because it'll be an easier process for me.
Sure.
But no, I would just sit down and write. And, you know, then when I, which was good, you know, it was a good creative process to kind of engage with it that way. But, you know, I think it'll be better when I start to sketch it out and I kind of put together some chapters and all. So, yeah, I wasn't one of those. That's not my nature is not to plan that way. My nature is just kind of to jump in and have at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the book got there, but, you know, also, and, you know, you tell your friend that read it, you know, I had some tremendous editors. So that book that, you know, your friend read, that's not the manuscript that I had.
Yeah.
A year ago. Mm-hmm. You know, the story's the same. The characters are the same. You know, but some of the dialogue has changed. Some of the plot has changed. And that was just because I, you know, one of the principles is to seek support. You know, I went out and I said, you know, there's people that do this. Let me go find them and get them to help me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's profound, huh, Annie?
That's funny how long it took me to get comfortable with that old concept.
Yeah, we can beat our heads against the wall for years. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and sure.
Let me jump around a little bit. We'll talk about the principles, if you would. And by the way, I had more than one friend read the book, and I read a part of the book. And the book is a beautiful read. I mean, it's really kind of captivating. It's a wonderful the way it's designed. You know, for myself anyway. So talk about the principles a little bit. Five principles.
Yeah, there's five, and none of them are more important than the others. It just kind of depends on where you are, you know, when in your life, which one you need to invest in. And they're really just the ones that worked for me. So a lot of times people will say they like the simplicity of them. But the five principles in the middle, we call the first one, develop vision and create reality. So it's a one principle with kind of double side to it. And then an arrow in the middle that's called action. So you and I talked about that. There's a lot of people that have a good, strong vision, but they're not taking the action that they need to turn it into that reality. So that's really important to get clear on it. The next one is to be still, you know, to be happy and fulfilled. You know, it's been my experience that you got to create those times of stillness because our society just wants, it's moving too fast, you know, with technology and email and Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So it's when we be still, I think we can process some of our worldly thoughts. And, you know, for me, we also, I think, get closer to God when we can just kind of block the world out, which is a good source of, you know, of energy. And then the one over there, the next one we've talked about as well is called Know Thyself. So that's closely attributed to Socrates when he talked about people knowing their strengths and their talents and their spiritual heritage, their place in the universe. So it's real important to do that. You can do that again on the outside. You know, what are your innate talents? What can you bring to the business world and to jobs? And then also on the inside, you know, what are the beliefs that I have that are holding me back from creating better jobs, better relationships, better health? So that's a lot of work there around Know Thyself. The next one is to seek support. Again, you and I have talked about it. How do we surround ourselves with people that are going to lift us up? And number one, and number two, how do we let them in, especially in the tough times? When they, you know, we're saying to them, hey, you don't understand. Well, they don't understand, and that's not their job. Their job is just to be there and help you and love you. So seek support. And then also on the other side of that is to be support. So I would say to all the listeners out there, you know, think, is there anybody right now that maybe needs some support from you, and you might just not be there because you're not aware enough, or you're not, you know, you're moving too fast. You know, a lot of times people say, I want to find the time to volunteer. And I'll often say, well, you're probably not going to find the time. You've got to create that time, you know, to go and give back. And then the last principle, so we have develop vision, create reality, be still, know thyself, seek support. And the final one is to evolve, just to undergo continuous and gradual change. So how do we have the learner's mindset? How can we reflect on the past and take away good memories? You know, how can we put ourselves in a position of learning from all that's happening to us, both bad and good?
Nice. They summed that up pretty nice. You've done that before, huh?
Yeah.
It's funny that I didn't design it this way at all. The questions that I've asked you, it kind of like we did, it did all kind of revolve around all those things anyway. You kind of bring all back to the principles, the jackrabbit.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, those principles came out of, you know, the journey that I had from the accident until, you know, the book. So you were talking to me about my life and what happened.
Sure.
And I was telling you, and it's real easy now to see, wow, these are the principles that make sense to this guy based on, you know, the experiences he's had in life so far.
Yeah, it's cool. It really is. Yeah. What, I don't know if you want to reveal too much of this, but what kind of is your vision? What's your next vision, or what do you have up your sleeve, or what are you going to focus on in the near future?
Yeah, no, well, I got a vision around making the book into a movie, and that's been a vision for a long time, starring Jennifer Aniston. She doesn't know that yet, Todd, so if you know, you can let her in on that, right?
Well, I'm sure she's listening right now, so that means
I did send her a book. My brother lives in L.A. He does some acting out there.
Oh, nice.
So he dropped off at her agent. I did, you know, send her a book. I don't know if she got it or if she read it, but just told him an intention. Yeah. And then, you know, I got some ideas for book number two, mm-hmm. and just keep kind of growing the speaking business, try to do a little bit speaking around the jackrabbit and the principle. And then I've still got a vision around the other business that I'm engaged in. I work for some wonderful people, so I've got some vision around creating some more business back here in the Philadelphia area. You know, just keeping my relationships with my family, my kids, my wife, and, you know, brothers, sisters, keep them all strong.
Good.
You know, and I think that vision will keep me busy.
What do you want to leave them with? Like a parting, kind of a parting shot. What do you want to leave anybody with? One idea at the end of this?
Yeah, I would just ask them to consider this question. If we knew one another, me and whoever's listening, and we bumped into one another in 6 months from now, and I said to them, hey, you know, what's going on? How's life? Good to see you. And they said, you know, life's wonderful. And I said, why? How would they answer that question?
Huh.
Because that's their vision, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage them to think about that and get clear on it if they're not. And then kind of every day just reflect and say, am I taking actions today to make that vision a reality? Pretty simple when we're aware of it.
Listen, again, I really thank your wife and your kids for letting you have an hour with us. I really appreciate you visiting on the show and sharing your own life experience. The book is Back from Heaven's Front Porch. It's Danny Bader. It's a heck of a book. I recommend it. Get to the website and contact him there. Get the book. Danny, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Todd. Happy holidays, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
There you have it, Mr. Danny Bader. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. I really appreciate all the support we've been getting.